ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
हरे कृष्णा। टुडे वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 26 टाइटल द ऐल गीता टेक्स्ट नंबर 31। यथोपश्रणमाणस्य भगवन्तं विभावसुम् शीतं भयं तमोप्येदि साधून् संसेवतस्तथा यथा जस्टस् उपश्रयमाणस्य ऑफ वन हू इज अप्रोचिंग भगवन्तं the powerful vibhavasum fire sheetam cold bhayam fear tamah darkness apyeti are removed sadhun saintly devotees samsevatah for one who is serving तथा सिमिलरली जस्ट एज कोल्ड फियर एंड डार्कनेस आर इरेडिकेटेड फॉर वन हू हैज अप्रोच्ड द सैक्रिफिशियल फायर सो डलनेस फियर एंड इग्नोरेंस आर डिस्ट्रॉयड फॉर वन एंगेज्ड इन सर्विंग द डिवोटीज ऑफ द लॉर्ड सो ट्रांसलेशन रेस्पॉन्सिवली जस्ट एज द कोल्ड फियर एंड डार्कनेस are eradicated for one who has approached the sacrificial fire. So dullness, fear and ignorance are destroyed for one engaged in serving the devotees of the Lord. So here is a purport by servants of Srila Prabhupada. Those engaged in fruitive activities are certainly dull. They lack higher awareness of the Supreme Lord and the soul. Materialists are engaged more or less mechanically in gratifying their senses and ambitions. And thus they are considered dull or practically unconscious. All such dullness, fear and ignorance are removed when one serves the lotus feet of the Lord, just as cold, fear and darkness are removed when one approaches a fire. Om Jnana Timirantasya Jnana Jana Shalakaya Chakshurun Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Abhishtam Sabitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam नमो विष्णुपदाय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमदे भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभुनित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण। So here is a very beautiful verse, which we can see it has a lot of meaning in it, and it is very, very practical for all of us. So here, three material conditionings are described. One is dullness, fear, and ignorance. Dullness. If you ask what is dullness, in this world we can't actually find dullness. People are very active materially. People are very enthusiastic when it comes to any kind of materialistic engagement. When we drive, if we go to a traffic light, there are three lights. One is red, one is green, and one is orange. So if there is green, it is a green signal. We can just drive past. Nothing to worry. And if it is red, it means we have to stop immediately. And if it is orange, means slow down. Have a look. If necessary, stop. Otherwise, go ahead. But be cautious. In the same way, when one person is living, especially when one is young, it is green light. Do whatever one likes. This is the best opportunity for enjoyment. So this is the green signal that people are looking forward. And they want to see the green signal all the time. But unfortunately, it doesn't happen. So after some time, as the age progresses, one actually sees the orange light. The traffic light becomes orange. And especially if somebody is on the mid 40s, 50, 55, then one is actually seeing the orange light. However, there are some people who are driving, they really do not follow the traffic rules. Okay. So according to rule, if there's orange, maybe slow down, have a look, be careful. But when they see the orange light, they actually drive fast. Okay. In the same way, in material life, when people hit 50 or when they are approaching the old age, they think this is the last opportunity. So we have to drive fast. We have to try our best. So there is a saying that if life starts at 50, or maybe even later. There is a reason behind that, because people work very hard during their youth and amassed a bit of money, and now is the time to spend. So they try to enjoy at that time. One devotee said he went on a trip, and he was a photographer, and he went on a ship, and it is a cruise, and it is going in different islands in South America. Around South America, Caribbeans, I think. So it's a very wonderful opportunity. So we think all young people are going and they are enjoying very nicely, going from one island to the next island, you know, a month or, you know, a couple of weeks trip. It is very nice, very beautiful. However, he mentioned that all those people were old age people, very elderly. Hardly can they walk, or, you know, they can walk pretty much, and, you know, that's it. It's towards the fag end of their life is approaching quite soon. So now is the opportunity. They are taking full advantage and they are traveling and they are trying to see. Same, if you go to Swanson Street, you know, during summertime, you can see many buses, tourist buses are coming, and they are taking them around Melbourne, which we don't want to see anymore. Like, there is nothing new in it. It's all the same. But they want to go and they want to visit. And if you see the buses, you can see full of old people. Same in the flights. If you fly from, you know, India, if you're coming in from Singapore or from Malaysia to Australia, you can see so many old people. If you go to Europe, you know, if you're flying, you can see so many old people. All in the name of tourism, because they don't want to miss the opportunity. This is the last chance, use it. So this is the orange light, and people are trying their best, go fast when there is orange light. So this is material enthusiasm, and this is spiritual dullness. As Vedic scripture says, Panjashatam Vanam Vrajet. Vanam Vrajet means one must, actually. It's quite an affirmative statement. One must go to forest, or one must take the devotion service seriously when one is hitting 50 years of age, means almost 50% of one's life, then one should take devotion service seriously. So exactly opposite we can see in the current scenario. Exactly opposite. So that's the first thing, dullness, as we can see in this verse. Then that's not the only thing in this world. Dullness is there. That is spiritual dullness. And also we can see, even people make their plans. Yes, Prahlad Maharaj gives a very wonderful plan regarding life. He says, okay, if we analyze our life, in 24 hours, 8 hours people are sleeping. All together. So it means, 8 means 30% of the time is wasted in sleeping. So if there one person is living for 75 years, 25 years is gone in sleeping. If you think about it, it's a bit shocking. But 25 years is gone. Then remaining there are 50 years. Then what are the other activity? The main people generally work. You know, working means 8 hours at least work. Then commutation, that is 1 hour up, 1 hour down. Then 10 hours gone. So nearly 40% of the time is in work-related activities, which is again 30 years out of 75 in working. So how, what does that cost? 30 plus 25 is gone, 55 is gone, then 20 years are left. And in those 20 years, we had to eat. We had to go for shower and things like that. We had to do the whatever cooking, whatever necessary activities we had to do. It'll, you know, if we count that to, you know, 3 or 4 hours a day, it'll add another 12.5 years in the whole span. So how much is left? Maybe 7.5 years left. So this 7.5 years one has in one's lifetime to, this is not actually calculating, Prahlad Maharaj actually goes a little bit more further, that is the childhood time, that he says, you know, it's pretty frivolous activities children do, there's no use, you know, that's wasted. Hardly 5 years one gets, if you consider the whole lifespan of 75 years, to do something productive in devotional service. And in that too, if we are watching TV, if we have all other so many different kinds of entertainments, then that is also reduced. So this is the actual time that is there for valuable purpose, to fulfill the valuable purpose of human form of life. Now, in contrast to this, there are many examples. So one example I can remember, once I was speaking to a researcher, he was my supervisor, he happened to be my first supervisor. And he was telling, he was so passionate about research, so he was mentioning, he was actually calculating his life. He did his PhD in quite early age, maybe 25 at least, 24, 25 he finished, and straight away started working, you know, and soon he went up in the ladder very soon. And he must be some 30, 32, or 33 or so, or close to 35 maximum. And he was mentioning, look, one person, if we analyze his life, he was actually giving the materialistic equivalent of Prahlad Maharaj's calculation. And he was telling, okay, if you consider one person, at least he takes 25 years to understand one field. Say he has to first, you know, go to the primary education, then, you know, go to the higher degree, then actually get into the field which he wants to, and further, you know, to get a master, so one understands a little bit, okay, what's going on, then do research, get a PhD, then one actually understands, okay, what's going on to some degree. Then actually one can start producing something. So he was telling, okay, at 25 to 30 one can actually start producing something for the field. He was mentioning about a particular field. Alright, okay. Then at 30 one can actually become, go a little bit deeper. And one can go like that for 35, 40, 45, 50, 55. See, he was calculating from 30 to 55 and maybe 60 max. So 30 years we can actually contribute. And that if one sticks to one field. But people, you know, switch around a few fields. So maybe 2-3 fields, 10 years each. So that is the one human being's contribution. So he was planning. Oh, so he was actually worried, you know, how much can I do? So this is the perfect materialistic calculation. He's seeing there's a beginning and he's seeing there's an end. But he's fully absorbed in something which is really speaking frivolous. If we go, people are very happy, especially people are, when they are traveling, they are, you know, generally people are very happy. If you go to airport, people are a bit happy because there must be, especially international travel, people are very happy. One time I was going in a taxi to the airport, so driver was speaking to me. He was saying, where are you going? So I said, you know, I am going distant. So he said, yeah, it's good. I also go, you know, once a year, whole year I work, once a year I go. And he was telling, while going, I can manage the flight, because this was a flight from Melbourne to Europe, so it is a long flight. And one becomes completely dead once you get there. It's really intense. So, he was mentioning, when I'm flying there, I can manage the time, the jet lag, all those kind of things I can manage when I'm flying from here to the destination, to the holiday place. But while return, I can't. He was telling, while return, you know, I'm just completely devastated. You know, I can't handle that. He was telling again and again, I can't handle that. So this is the nature, you know, people want to go on vacation and then come back means they are completely dead. There is no question of recharging. And Srila Prabhupada was in one of the airports and he saw so many people like that. They were very happy flying, so they were going. And then Prabhupada said, whom are you seeing? Then people say, you know, happy, trying to be happy people, they are going here, there. Then Prabhupada said, no, they are actually flapping dead bodies. in this verse also purport says, you know, it's the flapping dead bodies. They are, even though they are awake materially, spiritually, they are dead, literally. So this is the position of this world. It's not much in there. Second aspect mentioned in this verse is bhayam, fear. That is also very common. It said, Bhagavatam says, very nicely analyzes fear. It said, 11th canto says, bhayam dvitiya abhinivesha syat. Means, bhayam, the fear is the second nature of the living entities. Second nature. And I was looking at the dictionary, what do they have to say about fear? It's mentioned, an unpleasant emotion caused by the belief that someone or something is dangerous. It's an unpleasant emotion caused by belief that someone or something is dangerous. This is their definition. That is fear. And what is the reason for fear? It's a straightforward reason. Couple of reasons. First and primary reason, one is, or maybe secondary reason, that is, one is identifying with the temporariness. Even though we are eternal, even though we are the spirit soul and we are eternal, when we identify that we are temporary, that causes fear. Because for the spirit soul, that is a completely precarious thing to think that I am temporary, because he is not, we are not temporary. But when we limit that in terms of death, in terms of happiness, in terms of nice experience, then that causes fear. That is dangerous for the spirit soul. Spirit soul cannot think in that way, cannot accept that. But when the material nature forces that upon the spirit soul in terms of conditioning, in terms of the material mind, in terms of the material body, then we feel that we are fearful. That's the reason it's the most intense experience in the material existence. We have four aspects to material suffering: eating, related issues, that is not food, eating, sleeping, mating and defending, of which the most danger or the most prevailing and the most intense experience is fear, and so the most of the activities are directed towards defending. So fear is considered one of the most strongest experience of material existence. We can see even the birds, if you see birds, if you go out, birds are eating, they are trying to eat, but at the same time they are looking left and right all the time. You know, it just looks like, you know, eat something, then looks here, eat something here, then looks here, like that. Why? Because they are fearful about their life. Somebody is trying to catch, somebody is trying to kill. So that is very fearful. So that is the animal existence. When we go to the lower species of existence, then this defending and the fear is even going much higher. Think about the life in jungle, in the forest. The whole time the deer, the zebra, they are all in fear. They are fearful about their own life. We can see in National Geographic Channel how the tiger is chasing, cheetah is chasing, and you know, a bunch of them are running. And whoever is last, caught. So if you are running, if tiger is chasing, there is a saying, if tiger is chasing, make sure that you are not the slowest. Rest of everything is okay. If few people are running, if you are the slowest, then you are finished. So that is survival of the fittest. So this is the fear. And another experience I had when we went to aquarium in a few months, couple of months back, I think. We're seeing all different kinds of fishes. Many were quite dull. And near the fish tank, there was a description about the fish. You know, in all of them, most of them, there was this description: what kind of poison they can produce. Many were poisonous, or what is the defense mechanism that is mentioned in the next to them. So all of them, most of them are, they are prey to as well as predators. Both, you know, they, because some fishes are trying to kill them and to eat, and they are trying to eat someone else. So how can they be very happy? It's always fear is there. Because it's somebody trying to kill all the time. So in human form of life, that is a bit reduced. That is, we are not really worried about our death all the time. Even though, spiritually speaking, Krishna says, janma mrityu jaravyathi dukha doshanu darshanam. That is, one should be thinking, or one should be cautious that these four mysteries are there in our life. About death, one has to be aware of that fact. Krishna is not telling, forget it. However, for the materialist, they forget it. Because otherwise it is very difficult to enjoy. So the reason for fear is identifying with the body. And ultimate reason for identifying with the body is, it is mentioned, Isha Tapedasya Viparya Smriti. That is, one forgets one's eternal identification with Krishna. Because of that forgetfulness, one actually comes in the clutches of Maya, and one completely identifies with the body and the mind, and then, of course, there is fear, which is the second nature. And Maya nicely gives the forgetfulness, you know. It beats, gives beating, and after that, covers. Then again beating, and then again covering. So beating time, we think it's very bad, but when we get covered, we think it's alright, it's not too bad after all. Then again beating. So this is continuing. Not just in one lifetime, life after lifetime. So this is the loss of memory of the Supreme Lord and further suffering. Then the third term mentioned in this verse is ignorance. Ignorance means basically ignorance of our identity, our relationship with Krishna. And especially the knowledge is exactly the opposite. Understanding we are the spirit soul and we are servants of Krishna. So that is knowledge. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, modern education is only making asses. The products are just asses because they are unaware of the reality of life. And Prabhupada says, in a slaughterhouse of material education. Slaughterhouse. Because people, it's a fact. If people are educated and if they are, you know, nicely working, they don't want to hear about Krishna. Go to Sanskrit Street, take a bunch of books with you and try to stop one person who is having a nice tie, a coat and suit. And immediately, they have immediate reaction. Most of them, 99.99, they have an immediate, no. You know, they become very serious. Oh, yeah. They, you know, their whole mouth closes and, you know, a specific expression they make, immediately no. Very difficult. They don't want to hear anything because they are puffed up and they are very fixed. They are very determined in what they are doing. They are just walking, like, you know, just one place to another. They are just, you know, they have their file and things like that. They are just walking. That's it. Difficult to stop. Because they are puffed up. They are educated. Now they have a job and that's it. So this is slaughterhouse, Prabhupada says. And also in Isha Upanishad, there is a very nice analogy is given regarding this. He said, a serpent with a jewel on the hood. A serpent is dangerous. A serpent is dangerous. But people become a bit cautious about the serpent because it has poison. But if there is a jewel on his hood, then it is very attractive. Because jewel is very attractive. So people can go and people can get bitten. So that is the nature of modern education, materialistic education. So Prabhupada says, oh, be careful. And Prabhupada also says, Prabhupada used to tease, Prabhupada used to say, what's the use of your education? You go to uni, you study for many years, and after that you just like bark like a dog. And you go to in front of, you know, you go to one master and, you know, beg for something. And then you go to the next master and beg for the next thing, just like a dog. Well, that's a fact. Prabhupada is actually going to the court. Prabhupada is saying, we had to go after studying, you know, we go to the one door, knock, okay, give me a job. Then we rejection, then go to the next door, rejection, go to the next door, rejection. We have all experience. So Prabhupada says in a classic way, you know, just like a dog, you know, sniffing, you know, go here, or will I get something? No. Go to the next. So Prabhupada says, oh, you know, what is such a great thing about this after all? Now, these three aspects, that is dullness, fear and ignorance, how can we remove it? Solution is straightforward. What is it mentioned here? By? Basically serving, devotional service. Primarily it is devotional service and specifically we are pointing out unto serving devotees. Okay. So, devotional service is such that it gives three things, devotional service. When we perform devotional service, it gives three things. As the verse says in a bhakti, paresha and bhavasyat. It said, bhakti gives three things. One is, directly it gives devotion. When we perform any activity in devotional service, let it be chanting, hearing, taking prasadam, associating with the devotees, it gives devotion. It increases our devotion. Okay, that is the first product. Second, ultimately it can give direct experience of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We can get direct experience of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we can actually mature and increase that experience of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the third thing is, one gets detachment from matter and all materialistic association. One can get detachment. So by just performing bhakti, there are three effects. Now, it said, while eating, the example is given, while eating we get few things. While eating prasadam, what we get? One, hunger is satisfied. We get nourishment, isn't it? And also, one gets actually pleasure. So these are the three effects of eating. In the same way, while doing devotional service, one gets devotion, one gets detachment, and one gets direct experience of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we can, here also we can see in this verse it's mentioned, one perform devotional service unto the devotees, this the dullness, fear and ignorance are destroyed. Now, how we come to devotional service? It's very simple. How we all came to devotional service? By mercy of devotees. One or the other person actually showed mercy unto us, and that was the only reason we came to devotional service. We may have come to temple, we may be on street, we may have gone to crossways. Somebody gave a book, somebody gave some prasadam. That's how we became devotees, all of us. So it is mentioned, okay, one can continue devotional service one from previous life. One has done some agyata sukriti, the devotional service which has performed without knowledge. Then from there, one is carrying forward in this lifetime. Or if nothing is there, still by the mercy of devotees, one can take up devotional service. Blank, no problem. One can actually take up devotional service. It is possible. So these are the two, you know, that by the association of devotees, we come to devotional service. And when we come to devotional service, we understand that one of the most potent items of devotional service is association with devotees. So there are Panchanga Bhakti, there are five most important items of devotional service. One is Sri Bhagavad Bhakta Sangha, that is association with the devotees and serving the devotees. This is one of the very, very, very most important items of bhakti. Without association, we cannot actually maintain devotional service. I have, you know, we even nice devotees practicing, when we go out of the association of the devotees, it is shaken. The devotional service is shaken. I have seen devotees who were nicely practicing, just went to India, just associated with the family, went everywhere, then came back, while going, you know, asking about Vrindavan, is it like this in Vrindavan, full, you know, very inquisitive, chanting such announcements, but went just to India, you know, just with the family, that's all. They haven't actually gone to a highly sinful place or, you know, something, no, just went to family, spent some time, then came back, and after that, there was no rounds. 16 became 0 rounds. And sometimes even don't want to see the devotees also. This is how, you know, it pulls one down. Just, so with the strength of the devotee association, one is able to perform devotional service, and when it's out, it can, there is a potential danger. Then association with the devotees, what does that mean? Okay, and service to devotees. Association, we think, you know, it's enough if we spend enough time just sitting together, maybe talking about cricket or footy or prajalpa or this or that. That's not actually association of the devotees. And even though there is apparently physical association, that's not really association. Association means there has to be something inspirational in terms of devotional service. Some encouragement in devotional service, talking something about Krishna. That is necessary. That is actual association. If you are not getting that, then there is something wrong. That's not association. And it is mentioned, even the Lord appreciates association and serving with the devotees. It is mentioned specifically pointing out about the serving of the devotees. The Lord appreciates a lot service to devotees. The Lord mentions, one who considers one to be devotee of Krishna, he is not his devotee. But one who says, I am the devotee of Krishna, then he is the devotee. It's a statement from Mahabharata. So that much Krishna is looking, you know, how we are serving the devotees. And there is a wonderful pastime in Chaitanya Charitamrita, which actually shows this beautiful the glory of association with the devotees and glory of serving the devotees. This is a very beautiful pastime because Mahaprabhu is actually demonstrating how much he cares for a devotee who serves other devotees. So this is the pastime of Kalidas. So this comes in Antilila. Kalidas was a great Vaishnava and he was known to serve the devotees and he wanted always mercy from the devotees. He had such a strong faith in devotees. So his approach to devotees were in a very peculiar way. He wanted the remnants of prasadam from all Vaishnavas in Bengal. Okay. It doesn't matter whether the devotees are neophyte or advanced. It doesn't matter which caste these Vaishnavas belong to. Whether lower caste, upper caste, Brahmana, whoever. Doesn't matter. If they are Vaishnava, then Kalidas wanted the remnants. So, there is very interesting pastime regarding this, where Kalidas wanted remnants from a great Vaishnava whose name was Jadu Thakur. So Jadu Thakur was born in a very low caste family and he wanted the remnants. And naturally Kalidas was from a higher family and he wouldn't give remnants. As we know, devotees are reluctant to give remnants of their prasadam. We can try here, but devotees are in general relevant. Then devotees play some trick. We don't know the intention so much, whether actually to get the remnants or to get the prasadam. Anyway, people play trick and you know get some prasadam from different place or the item they like. However, Kalidas went to Jadu Thakur's house with lot of mangoes, sweet mangoes. And first of all he went and he gifted those mangoes to Jadu Thakur and he paid obeisances to Jadu Thakur as well as to his wife. So when he paid obeisances, great Vaishnavas Jadu Thakur, he and his wife, they also paid obeisances. Then Jadu Thakur asked Kalidas, "How can I serve you? You are such a wonderful Vaishnava, how can I serve you? Shall I arrange for some prasadam from a Brahmana's house? Because you are from an elevated family and I cannot serve you prasadam from my house because I am from a lower caste and how can I serve you prasadam? So I will arrange something from a nearby Brahmana's house." So immediately Kalidas became very, you know, he felt very bad. He said, "Look, I just came. I am such a sinful person. I am very, very satisfied just by seeing you. And my life is successful just seeing you. And I came to get your darshan. And you please don't speak like this. That is, I will arrange some prasadam from nearby Brahmana's house." So Kalidas was also very elevated consciousness. And Kalidas said, "You know, it's okay, I don't want any such kind of prasadam, it's alright." Then Kalidas actually started saying, "How can you, I need one thing." Because Thakur asked, "How can I serve you?" So Kalidas said, "I need one thing. If you can grant me, that'd be of great help. And what I need is, please place your lotus feet on my head." So it's a heavy request. If anyone comes to you and asks, "Please keep your feet on their head," we can't do that. No one can do that. However, you know, Thakur, he became completely bewildered. Thakur said, "How can I do that? First of all, I am from a lower family. And second, you are from a higher family. And you are a gentleman, you are educated, you are wealthy. And how can I place my feet on your head? It's an offense." So Kalidas said, "Alright, I mean, what can we do? It's okay." He said, "Actually, according to the philosophy, according to Shastra, we shouldn't actually differentiate Vaishnavas according to caste. You know, we have heard Vaishnava Jati Buddhi. That is, Vaishnavas shouldn't have Jati Buddhi. That is, okay, he's a devotee, so then there is no question of which family he belongs to. Is he coming from a lower caste? Is he coming from an upper caste? You know, it doesn't matter what. He's a devotee, that's it." And he started quoting Shastras. So Kalidas said, he recited one verse. He said, "Name bhaktas bhaktas chaturvedi ma bhakta shapacha priya tasme deyam tadograhyam sacha pujya yathakyaham." Said, even though one is a very learned scholar in Sanskrit literature, if he is not engaged in pure devotion service, he is not accepted as my devotee. But if someone born in a family of dog eaters is a pure devotee, with no motives for enjoyment through fruitive activity or no motives for enjoyment or fruitive activities or mental speculation, he is very dear to me. All respect should be given to him And whatever he offers should be accepted, for such a devotee are identical, are indeed as worshipable as I am. Then he continued, Kalidas continued, he said, a person may be born in a Brahmana family and have all 12 Brahmanical qualities, but if in spite of being qualified, he is not devoted to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, who has a navel shaped like a lotus, he is not as good as Chandala, who has dedicated his mind, words, activities, wealth and life to the service of the Lord. Simply to take birth in a Brahmana family or to have Brahmanical qualities is not sufficient. One must become a pure devotee of the Lord. If a Kshopacha or a Chandala is a devotee, he delivers not only himself but his whole family. Whereas a Brahmana who is not a devotee but simply has Brahmanical qualifications cannot even purify himself. What to speak of his family? Then he also quoted the famous verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, Aho Padashyapacho Gariyan Yajjihvahe Vartate Namatupyam Tevus Tavase Juhuhu Shushnurarya Brahmanachu Nama Grhanantiyete. That is, if one chants holy name of the Lord, even if he is from a Dogitar family, he has actually surpassed everything and he is actually qualified even to perform Vedic sacrifices. So when he heard all these verses, Thakur became very happy. Because when he heard this old references, Thakur became very happy. It's not that he tried to defend. So Chadu Thakur became very happy. But Thakur said, whatever Shastra says is completely true. But there is one thing. I am not that kind of a devotee. It is talking about an advanced devotee, but I am not such kind of a devotee. So even though it is mentioned in Shastra that if he is a devotee, then he is worshipable. And he is actually much more than a Brahmana. But at the same time, I am not such a qualified person. So what's the use of, you know, you asking me, you know, give me the mercy. How can I give? And Kalidas understood this is not going to work. Straightforward approach is not going to work. So I had to do something. So he said, okay, anyway, what can I do? I will go. And he actually again offered obeisances and asked for permission to leave. And he left. And while Kalidas was leaving, Thakur followed him. Into, as a Vedic custom, to leave him till, you know, he goes away. He actually went with him, escorted him to some degree. And when he left, when he went out of vision, Kalidas was looking. So Kalidas was turned and had a look. Then he could see Thakur was walking. And it was a bit muddy kind of land. And when he was walking, the feet impression was going. So he could see, okay, which way he was actually walking and returning to his house. Immediately Kalidas went and he actually took the dust from those feet impression and he put on his head. And after that, Kalidas, he hid somewhere. He went around the house and he went to a place where all the rubbish are thrown. And Kalidas was waiting there. Then Thakur went there. When Thakur went there, he actually offered mentally these mangoes to his deity, Gopal deity. And after offering the nice mangoes to the deity, he was sitting and his wife took these mangoes, peeled and he offered it to Thakur. So Jadu Thakur, he ate the mangoes nicely. He actually took the skin off and nicely he peeled everything and he actually sucked the whole mango. And he started eating by sucking and, you know, taking out the juice. And after he finished eating, wife also ate. And all the mangoes were finished. And they took all the bunch of, you know, leftover and they covered in a banana leaf and they threw it in the ditch. Well, you know, nobody's, you know, just threw it. And there Kalidas was waiting. So suddenly this leftover came and, you know, this, you know, it's like a ball, you know, bouncing, and it came and Kalidas caught it and he started relishing. And he took each bite, you know, he was taking each mango seed and even he was tasting and he was eating and whatever remains he was taking, everything fresh. And then it is mentioned, Kalidas became so ecstatic, he became, you know, he went into complete ecstasy because he got the remnants from such a great Vaishnava. We may eat remnants, but we don't become so ecstatic. We may relish some taste, but, you know, we will not become ecstatic. And we don't have the right consciousness also when we accept the remnants. Sometimes we are hungry, remnants here, the remnants is there, it's good. We can eat something more, we can fill the belly. But the consciousness of Kalidas was so high, so he became completely ecstatic. And it is mentioned, he was able to eat in this method. So the first method is offer mangoes and fruit and ask for the remnants. If some great brahmanas, they would give the remnants. And if he is not ready to give remnants, he would take this approach, which he used for Jadu Thakur. In the same way, he actually covered all the Vaishnavas in Bengal. So it is mentioned the faith of Kalidas to the devotees was such a great. It is such a great thing. And interesting enough, Mahaprabhu actually gave him the special mercy for doing this. So that is the interesting part. So when Mahaprabhu was in Jagannath Puri, he was living in Gambhira, which was near Jagannath Puri temple, and he used to go to the temple through Simhadwar. Simhadwar means the main gate is Simhadwar. There is Simhadwar, there is Ashwadwar, there is Ashwa, the horse gate, there is, you know, different gates are, four gates are there for Jagannath Puri temple. So Simhadwar is the main one. So all the time Mahaprabhu used to go to Simhadwar, then he will go to the northern direction, and then there is a gate there, through that he used to enter the temple. So always Mahaprabhu had somebody following him, that was his personal servant Govinda. And Govinda had a water pot. So before entering the temple, Mahaprabhu would wash his feet in a ditch. And he has specifically instructed Govinda that he shouldn't give this water to anyone. So it is straight thrown to the ditch and that's it. No one can get the mercy of the Lord such easily. So he won't give it to anybody. Then, and Mahaprabhu was very strict regarding this. So one time Kalidas went there, and Kalidas, he went straight. Mahaprabhu was washing his feet. He went near, and as he was washing the feet and the water was falling, you know, dripping from his feet, he took like this, one palmful, and he drank straight. Then Mahaprabhu was washing still. Mahaprabhu didn't say anything. Govinda didn't say anything. Mahaprabhu was washing again. He took the second palmful. He drank. Then Mahaprabhu was washing again. He took the third palmful and he drank. And he went for the fourth. Then Mahaprabhu said, it's enough. He said, whatever was your desire, I have fully satisfied. And that's enough. And said, don't repeat this again. So this was actually the appreciation of Mahaprabhu. He actually gave the direct mercy. He hasn't actually given this mercy to anyone as such, washing the feet and giving the water. So Mahaprabhu directly gave this mercy to Kalidas because of his faith in devotees, because of service to devotees. So service to devotees, we shouldn't think service to devotees means, you know, only remnants. We shouldn't make that is the only policy. That is, you know, snatch from the plate or, you know. But we should be ready to follow their instruction and to actually serve them with sincerity. So that is really serving the devotees, because we cannot cheat Krishna. Krishna knows, he is sitting in everyone's heart. He is looking at the intention, why we are doing. What is our real purpose? So we had to try to do devotional service. We had to try to do service to devotees. And by that mercy of the devotees, we can actually, as it is mentioned here, we can get over the dullness, fear, ignorance. As just like cold, fear and darkness are eradicated for one who has approached the sacrificial fire. So, I stop here and see if there are any comments or questions.